Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. In this week of prayer for Christian unity, we hear from a variety of voices representing the different Christian communities. Firstly, from the new president of that pontifical council, from the Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, and from the Franciscan Custos of the Holy Land about relations between the churches in Jerusalem today. And finally, from the spokesman of the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople and spiritual leader of the Orthodox world. Reflections drawn up by the different Christian churches in Jerusalem form the heart of this week of prayer for Christian unity, which is currently being marked in countries across the Northern Hemisphere, while in the South it's normally celebrated around the Feast of Pentecost. Recalling the unity of the early church in Jerusalem, the theme this year is built around a verse from the Acts of the Apostles, describing how those early disciples were one in the apostles' teaching and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and prayer. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict dedicated his general audience on Wednesday to this theme, while in an article in the Vatican newspaper L'Osservatore Romano, the head of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, Cardinal Kurt Koch, says the example of martyrs from the different persecuted churches remains the most credible witness to the cause of Christian unity today. In the article, the Swiss theologian says it's vital for Christians not to be resigned to our lack of unity, but rather to be recommitted to tackling the challenges facing the ecumenical movement today. I talked to the Cardinal about the significance of this week of prayer, beginning with the need to deepen the spiritual dimension of the ecumenical movement.
I think for the future it's very important to deepening the spiritual dimension of the ecumenical movement. Then the ecumenical movement has begun with the prayer, because the unity of the Church is a gift of the Holy Spirit.
We're looking at this week of prayer for Christian unity based on reflections from the churches in Jerusalem. Today it's a very complicated picture with many different Catholic rites and Christian churches, but it also takes us back to the origins of the Christian community, doesn't it?
Yes, we have the scope of the week of the prayer, the first communion of Christians in Jerusalem. And today we have a situation is very, very difficult. I have visited Jerusalem in the December, and I hope that the Christians can help one another in this very difficult situation to find more unity in the Christians' situation.
The theme from Jerusalem this year reminds us of the four pillars of faith for those early Christians: the teaching of the apostles, fellowship, prayer, and the breaking of bread. As you know, many churches would like to see a sharing of the Eucharist in order to help us grow closer together. What is your reaction to that?
I kind of understand this meaning, but for us, the Catholics and the Orthodox, the communion in the Eucharist is the visible sign of the unity, and that we cannot celebrate the same Eucharist in this time must be a very, very strong motive for deepening the dialogue of charity and the dialogue of truth. Because the fine of the ecumenical way is the unity of the Church and then the unity of the Eucharist. And I think that's very important that we have new forces to attend this final view of the ecumenical. the view is very different between the churches.
You also talk about ecumenism of the martyrs, don't you? And sometimes it's very difficult to see in situations of extreme suffering, of martyrdom, the importance of an ecumenical witness.
We have martyrs in all churches. And here at Rome, we have in the Church of St. Bartolome, all martyrdom in this time. And I think what Pope John Paul II have said, that between the martyrs we have just perfect unity. And when we see this unity between the martyrs, we can have new forces to make visible the unity that the Holy Spirit has given us.
Meanwhile, in the city of Jerusalem, which I visited earlier this month, each day of the Week of Prayer for Unity is being dedicated to a different one of the Christian churches present in the ecumenical movement. During my trip there with the coordination group of bishops from Europe and North America, ecumenism was also a central focus of our meetings, including visits to many of the other Eastern Rite churches and the other Christian communities, 13 of them in all. Among the Christian leaders whom we met there was the Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, Suhail Dawani, who told me more about the history and current activities of the Anglican community in the Holy Land.
The Anglican presence started in 1841 when the missionaries came here to the country. And at that time, they worked among... they started with the Jews, then they turned to the Christians who were there. And I am one of the families that really welcomed the Anglican tradition back in 1841.
It was very much connected, obviously, with Western political power back at the origins of its presence here. How much is that still the case today, or do you see yourself now as an indigenous community?
In 1905, the first national council was established here in Palestine, beginning ordination to the indigenous Christians, Anglican Christians in the region. 1958, it was the year that an Arab Anglican bishop was consecrated here in Jerusalem. In 1976, to give you a little bit of history, that the Synod of the Jerusalem and the Middle East was established here in Jerusalem with the first Arab Anglican bishop at that time. So for me, I am the 14th Anglican bishop in Jerusalem, but the fourth Arab Anglican since 1976. So it means that the church began to indigenize the church early in the beginning of the 19th century.
Your diocese includes not only here in Israel and Palestine, but also in Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon, doesn't it? What sort of size is it today?
Well, our diocese extends over 5 countries of the Middle East. We are in Israel, Palestine, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. We have 27 parishes with more than 34 clergy. And the main work of the diocese here is really the institutions, because we run more than 30 institutions in the fields of health, medical health, education, and rehabilitation. This is our main work here.
You have a hospital in Gaza, don't you? One of the few hospitals there. What is the situation like there today?
Our hospital in Gaza is really offering good services to the people there. And during the last war in Gaza, our hospital used to work around the clock. And it's a good ministry there. And at the same time, it's really a part of our witness here in the region. And today, the hospital is adding new specialties, especially with breast cancer unit, which has been established almost two years ago. And we are trying to reach to all the patients, even who are unable to come to the hospitals. So we have mobile clinics that go to the camps to treat the Palestinians there.
Is it difficult to get the needed medical supplies in through the blockade?
Well, it is not always easy, of course, you know, because due to the present situation, it's not easy. There's no free access to medical supplies. But through USAID and Red Cross, we've been able to send medicine and food as well to the hospital.
How much do you work with the other Christian churches here in Jerusalem? I've heard it said that ecumenism began with the first intifada, the first realization that the churches had to work together.
In Jerusalem, there are 13 traditional churches in Jerusalem, and the Anglicans, we are one of them. And the ecumenical fellowship is really strong. And as you've seen the other day, that we come together on major feasts, and we meet almost every other month to discuss the Christian present the situation and the main challenges that face the church here and the Christian community. I can say that we have a good relationship among all the churches here in Jerusalem.
Is that at leadership level or particularly at grassroots level among people who are perhaps frustrated at the lack of progress, official progress in the ecumenical movement?
Well, the main work is really among the leadership of the churches. But for the laity, they are very much united. In this region, if you ask anybody about his denomination, he will never say, I am a Catholic, Orthodox, Anglican, we are a Christian. And they are very much united. And they need maybe more to do, you know, from our part as a churches.
Do you think that here in Jerusalem you can play a special role in helping us in Rome or Canterbury, for example, understand the mentality of the Oriental churches and how to make progress between East and West?
Well, we have to say something, that the role of the Christian community here is very important. Because the Christians here are indigenous people who've been here all the time. And we can play more to be a bridge for others. So in many ways, we are a bridge between the other faiths, whether they are Jews or Muslims. And we can play a very important role because some of our churches, they have base outside this region. And we are at the same time Eastern, belong to the Eastern churches. So we can play a very important role to bring West and East together here. At the same time, our role in peace movement is really strong because we promote peace and reconciliation in this part of the world. We work with others, we work with other faiths, but the importance of the Christian presence here is vital to the region and to Jerusalem itself.
Pope Benedict was here just a few months ago. How important was that visit, do you think, for the churches here?
Well, of course, we met with him. We have met with him as church leaders. Any visit from any church leaders, like His Holiness the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury or other, it's very important for us because it really empowers the Christian presence here. And at the same time, our people, they feel that they've been supported and they've been cared of, and somebody is really, you know, have some concerns toward this community in this land. So it's very important, I think. Any visit is very important. And that visit was brought all the Christians together. When there are big masses, I believe all the Christians were together and attended these big services, whether in Galilee or here in Jerusalem or Bethlehem.
There seems to be a growing awareness amongst Christians here or amongst the churches here that they can and they must play a much greater role in supporting Christians rather than just looking to help and support from outside.
We are doing our best to help our parishes and our community here. But with our limited resources, it is difficult to cope with the need of our community. I know that the main focus for us is really to keep the young people in the country. That because we are witnessing a big immigration for young people who are leaving the country. So it's very important to keep them here. That's why, like the Anglican Church here and others, education is very important for us. And we try our best to provide them with education and scholarships in order that they will stay here. And we need also other partners also to support the need of the communities here, mainly education, and to provide job opportunities for them, because young people, when they graduate here, they don't find jobs, so that's why they leave and they don't stay here in the country.
Speaking to the Palestinian Prime Minister, he told us that for the first time in 2009, the number of Palestinians returning has overtaken the numbers leaving. He's very optimistic about the future of the Palestinian state. Do you share that optimism?
We cannot feel it, and we don't see maybe very, very few numbers of Christians who are coming back, but not big numbers. We need to see that families are coming back to the area. But till now, if in the absence of a genuine peace, I don't think that people are willing to come here. I'm sure that many people, Palestinian people, will come back, and the Christians are among those people who would love to come back here. Because most of Christian families who live in America, in a way or another, they are very much settled. So to bring them here, you have to have something to attract them, if there are jobs, if there are a quietness here in the area. So, and they want to secure a better future for their children here in this land. I believe that we as a church, we can encourage and play an important role in bringing them back. So this is a very important step for the future. But as I said that, in the present situation, it's really difficult for them to come and stay here.
What is your views on the Kairos document? It's been seen as an important statement by all the lay Christians, at least here in the region.
Well, the Kairos document is not the only document that has been produced here, because the heads of the churches produce so many documents. Maybe every year we produce one document. It's one of these important documents that focus on the situation here and focus on the importance of approaching peace with justice in this land.
Do you think that it can help people outside perhaps to understand?
Nowadays, people have better understanding of the situation here, because every week we have so many pilgrims who come and worship with us and visit with us. So now people, they understand better than before about the real situation and what's going on here. So this is very important. I believe that personal context is very important when we have people come and visit us here and visit the local churches. So they become more acquainted with the situation here in this region.
Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, Suhail Dawani there. The Catholic Church in the Holy Land is itself divided into six different rites. Alongside the Latins, as Roman Catholics are called, you can find the Eastern Rite Maronites, Melkites, Armenians, Copts, and Syrian Catholic communities. Working closely alongside the Latin Patriarchate is the Franciscan Custody of the Holy Land, which has been there since the days of St. Francis himself in the early 13th century. The current custos, or head of the Franciscan community there, is Italian Father Giambattista Pizzaballa, who told me more about the history and day-to-day ecumenical challenges facing his order there.
The origin of the custody started with St. Francis, the meeting between St. Francis and the Sultan at that time, 800 years ago. And our mission is always, since then, the same. The first is to preserve the holy places of our redemption, the shrines, as we call them now, and the other to support the Christian presence here in Holy Land. For us are two aspects of the same mission, because the holy places are the stones of the memory of our redemption, and the Christians are the living stones that keep this memory alive.
Sometimes it's said that there's more attention to the stones than the actual living stones, that there's more concern here about who is in charge, who controls the different places, than about the actual Christian communities?
It is just an impression. It is not true, of course. Through the media, maybe we can see sometimes the fights, this famous fights at the Holy Sepulchre or the Basilica of the Nativity, and the people think that we are doing just that, which is not true. Most of the time, first of all, we agree, and we coordinate our activities. But like the Greek Orthodox, Armenians, also the Franciscan, Together with the holy places, we have many pastoral activities, social activities, educational activities, because to keep the holy place, to preserve the memory of the holy place, is also to preserve the testimony of that these places remind us forgiveness, love, passion to every human beings, and so on. So we have involved in the territory like any others.
So hospitals, education?
Exactly, education. We have schools, 14 schools, 29 parish churches, and many other social activities.
You talked about the other churches here. There are 13 Christian churches here in the Holy Land. It's a very complex picture. Mm-hmm. You've been here a lot longer than many of the other churches. What is your relationship like with the different, both Catholic rites and then other Orthodox denominations?
We, as Franciscan, live. We have daily relations with the Greek Orthodox Church and the Armenian Church, the Ethiopian and Syrian and Coptic. Let's say the Orthodox churches are our everyday partner for the holy places, for the activities, and also for the traditional tradition that we had in the last centuries. And we have quite good relations. Sometimes we have misunderstandings, as usual, it should be, because we are different from the cultural point of view, so we can not always agree. But we try to solve the problems in a civil way. With other churches, we have less relations because we have less common fields.
So the Protestant churches?
Protestant churches, yes. They came later in the mid-19th centuries. And usually we don't have problems with them, of course, but we don't live in the same context, so we have less relations.
Tell us a bit more about this daily relationship with the Oriental, the Orthodox churches, as you say.
First of all, it's a human relation, first of all. We live together. At the Holy Sepulchre and Basilica of Nativity, we live under the same roof. So, our relations is not about the theology issues or peace issues, political or whatever. It's about the everyday life that we have to share. The bills, the schedules, the cleanings, the expenses, these things that are very banal, very simple, but also not as easy as other things, because to talk about theology is very easy now, but when we have to discuss about who's first, who's second, to whom belongs, who has to pay, this touches you in your flesh, in a way. And also, through these banal things, we discover a lot of prejudices, suspicions, the baggage that history has delivered to us and that we have to deal with.
How do you deal with, as you say, these perceptions, these stereotypes that go back for centuries?
Yeah. First of all, we have to recognize them. It's not easy because sometimes you don't see. Because when you live in your own stereotypes, you don't know them. When you deal with others that are so different, you recognize. Second, we have to talk, talking and dialoguing. We can solve problems and also recognize and also to discover human relations among us.
You work under what's called a status quo, don't you, for the holy places?
This is the status quo.
What role does that play today? Mm.
This is the only way we have now to deal one another. We cannot change as long as there is a unanimity among all of us that we very difficult to have.
From outside, the outside perception is that it's something which is really standing in the way of improved relations, something for the 21st century.
Yeah. From outside, the people don't see the internal relations. They see only the results that are very, very poor, I recognize. But it takes time. Not we Westerns usually expect them to, them, I mean the Orthodox, the Orientals, to think like us. And when we have to live together, you have to accept each one and the other as they are, with their times, their approach, cultural approach, their differences and diversities.
Do you see part of your role as helping the Western churches understand this Oriental mentality, the Orthodox world?
We should, yes. We have, it's part of our role, of course, to help them to understand, but it takes time. And also, we know that it's not possible to. If you don't live here, you cannot understand some situations.
What makes a difference? For example, Pope Benedict's visit here or the visit of a religious leader, does that help in a way to make these differences clearer?
Sincerely, not very much, because all the, we are used to receive head of states and people, religious or leaders, they come and they go. And here are the things you have to work on the ground, little by little, and build the relations.
What gives you most hope about the future of these relations?
The youth. The youth is changing, the media is changing, also the mentality in the Orthodox countries, and this mentality is coming here also, it's a question of time.
Finally, to conclude today's programme, let's hear a reflection now on this week of prayer for Christian unity from the Orthodox perspective. Not from Jerusalem this time, but from Archdeacon Maximus Vigenopoulos, who is the spokesman for the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew I, spiritual leader of the Orthodox world. He spoke with my colleague Mario Galgano about the ecumenical journey and about current conditions for Christians at his headquarters in Istanbul.
When we speak of unity, we have to be careful. What do you mean by the word unity? For us, and for in my opinion, unity, it is a unity of churches. We cannot speak, when we speak about unity, we cannot speak out of ecclesial context. It is a unity between church communities. It is not a unity understood as unity of individuals, Christians. It is a very, very key perception to the way we understand the Christian unity. I think we have a lot in common, I mean, regarding the Christian anthropology. And I mean, one of our common points is that, as previous Pope said, is the dignity of each person. This is a very key theological, I mean, idea in our Western and Eastern anthropology. But we have, I mean, some different, I mean, approach to how we understand the church structure, and this is, I mean, linked to the problem of primacy. It is one of the main dividing points between the Roman Catholic and the Orthodox Church.
What is more a problem, the internal discussion between the churches, the Orthodox churches, or more the situation between the ecumenical patriarchate with the Turkey state, for example?
No, this is another question. I think now the situation in Turkey, I mean, regarding the religious freedom, is improving very fast. We are satisfied with improvements. And if we compare our situation with the past, it's much, much better than in the past. The question of religious freedom, the questions of having property, the question of freedom of expression. Yes, we are, I mean, this church is much, much better than in the past.
And the relation with other Orthodox churches? So the collaboration, I mean.
It's very good. We have, I mean, as in a family, we have, I mean, problems, you see. Even in the Roman Catholic Church, we have problems. We are a family, and in the family, always there are some disputes, some problems, and we try to solve in a spirit of collaboration and goodwill and respect at the same time the dignity of each local Orthodox Church.
Archdeacon Maximus Vigenopoulos of the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople there. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.